Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 928. The Trip in Confabanda, part 7. Locker Room Eclipse, part 2. This is being recorded on October 21st of the year 2016. In this program, we are once again going to examine aspects of the Trump phenomenon, not just the Trump campaign per se, but the Trump phenomenon, which to an ever greater extent is really looking like the made-up term that I applied to it, the Trumpen Confabanda. Confabanda is a suffix that a titular suffix that has been applied to German infantry units, and it also obviously has a made-up modifier, Trumpen, alluding, of course, to Donald Trump. Despite the media firestorm labeling Trump and his campaign as Kremlin dupes, etc., and maintaining that the high-profile hacks, the hack of the Democratic National Committee, and the shadow broker's non-hack of NSA cyber weapons are the work of Russian intel, whereas it does not appear to be Russian intel at all, but somebody going out of their way to make it look like Russian intel. And in the case of the shadow brokers, with that utterly comical Boris and Natasha-like accompanying text, it is, if it weren't so serious, and if the possibilities coming out of this weren't so devastating, and it is difficult to imagine anything more potentially devastating than nuclear war, it would be truly amusing. As foul as Donald Trump's attitude toward and behavior toward women is, and it certainly is not something I excuse, at the same time, I think that it is what Donald Trump referred to as locker room banter when discussing the, it was almost like a rap, almost like a gangster, a white man's gangster rap about women, the thing that he recorded while mic'd up talking to Billy Bush back in 2005, Billy Bush being the cousin of the secret president of the U.S. at that time, George W. Bush. As foul as that is, the media coverage being given to it has overshadowed a great many aspects of the Trump candidacy. And beyond that, the Trumpen Confabanda, because I think the Trump presidential campaign is already, and as a matter of design, metamorphosing into a civil war and or far right-wing slash fascist terror campaign to come. It literally is turning into the Trumpen Confabanda. The Trump campaign, or the Trumpen Confabanda, has been excellent at and very prolific at using dog whistles aimed at the underground Reich and the far right. Trump upped that ante considerably in the past week by claiming that Hillary Clinton was in bed with global bankers and global elites and the media establishment, etc. Thinly veiled code words for Jews, unquote. We're going to be talking about that and about the Trump campaign's insistence that the election has been rigged by those elites, because the way that is shaping up is as a battle cry, literally a call to war by elements of the far right. And we're going to be taking a look at Donald Trump's channeling of Adolf Hitler, his appeal to his followers to resist Hillary Clinton because she is the tool of international bankers, etc. We're going to take a look at Trump's appeals to the sovereign citizen movement and the elements like the Cleveland and Amon Bundy followers, and perhaps also at times to the Oath Keepers, too, a paramilitary group formed by a guy named Stuart Rhodes that incorporates large numbers of Middle East war veterans in its ranks. All of this has tended to be eclipsed, however, by Donald Trump's attitudes towards women. And again, I don't excuse that. The only thing that surprises me is that after on the stage of the Republican convention, he quasi-groped his own daughter Ivanka when she introduced him. Trump came on stage and put his hands on Ivanka's shoulders and looked her body up and down in what could only be described as a lascivious fashion, and then put his hands not exactly on her rear end, but close enough for jazz, as they say. She instinctively drew back and maneuvered his hand or arm away from her rear end. After watching him do that on the stage at the Republican convention, how anybody would be in any way surprised by the subsequent disclosures is beyond me. But as I have pointed out, and as we will see, Donald Trump is not a Russian puppet. Actually, the forces driving Donald Trump are German in nature, and specifically the Underground Reich. And the Truppenkampfverbande, in my considered professional opinion, is the transformation, the metamorphosis of the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground and controlling vast aspects of the American power structure, including corporations, the CIA, and large elements of our military. We are looking at the metamorphosis of the Underground Reich into an above-ground, broad-based mass movement. We're going to examine many aspects of that. I think it is more than a little ironic in a grotesque way that the Trump campaign, and this is also being echoed in the so-called progressive sector as well, that Hillary Clinton is a tool of bankers and Wall Street, etc. One of the things that some of the leaked emails of Hillary Clinton's associates reveal is that she has been giving thought to evaluating the possibility of reinstating the Glass-Steagall Act, which, when it was repealed under her husband, paved the way for the Wall Street collapse by opening the door to the sort of hallucinatory financial instruments that ultimately collapsed Wall Street. It's also very interesting to me to see Hillary Clinton being labeled as a tool of the media elites, the global bankers, etc. One of the things that we're going to talk about in this program is a guy named David Bossie, last name B-O-S as in Sam, S as in Sam, I-E. I'm going to wager that is not a name that is known to most of the listeners. He is the deputy campaign chairman for Donald Trump. Now, who is David Bossie? We're going to go into that at greater length, but rather than sort of keep people in suspense, this spoiler alert, David Bossie is the chairman of Citizens United. It was a lawsuit by Citizens United decided by the George W. Bush-controlled or strongly influenced Supreme Court that led to the Citizens United decision that opened up our electoral process to the unlimited financial participation of major capital interests, not just American, but foreign as well. With Trump having named David Bossie as his deputy campaign chairman, again, the head of Citizens United as his deputy campaign chairman, that Trump would have the gumption to label Hillary Clinton a tool of Wall Street special interests, bankers, etc., something that we've also seen echoed by the so-called progressive sector and the Bernie bots during the primary campaign. Well, it is, I guess, as surreal as anything we could imagine. Again, the deputy chairman of Trump's campaign, David Bossie, is the head of Citizens United. Remember that the next time someone accuses Hillary of being a tool of Wall Street, etc.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at SpitfireList.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
However, talking about the dog whistles that Trump has been using and that have, in a sense, reached their apex with a recent speech that he gave in West Palm Beach. We're going to look at commentary from a number of sources on that. The first comes from Alternet of October 13th of 2016. This is by Adele, A-D-E-L-E-M, Stan, S-T-A-N. In Nazi-like speech, Trump responds to sexual assault claims with broad conspiracy theory designed to foment mayhem. This reads in part, "It would be tempting to label as unhinged," unquote, the speech Donald Trump delivered in West Palm Beach on Thursday, a speech in which he dog-whistled a worldwide conspiracy against him without actually uttering the word, quote, Jews, unquote, and disparaged the appearance of women who have accused him of sexual assault and transgressions. But the speech was not unhinged at all. The speech was indeed hinged to the original purpose of Trump's campaign, to trade on the resentments of a restive remnant of white America, angry white men, and the women who love them, and set the stage for mayhem in the wake of his likely electoral defeat. This was not your standard off-the-cuff Trump rant. This was a scripted speech delivered with a teleprompter. It was crafted, and it featured the key words of right-wing complaints, quote, sovereign, unquote, global bankers, unquote, and slander, unquote. Really, it came right out of a Nazi propaganda playbook. And when one considers the themes common between Nazi propaganda films and the films made by top Trump campaign staffers Stephen K. Bannon and David Bossie as analyzed by Alternet, we should hardly be surprised. And by the way, we're going to read a portion of that article that was linked there. And the entire article, or almost the entire article, is in the written description for the record 928. Now, returning to Trump's West Palm Beach speech. Trump began with an attack on the New York Times, whose majority owners are a Jewish family, which he said was engaged in a conspiracy of global proportions with the Clintons, international bankers, and major corporations, or to stop him from winning the presidency. Quote, "For those who control the levers of power in Washington and for the global special interests, they partner with these people that don't have your good in mind. Our campaign represents a true existential threat like they haven't seen before. This is not simply another four-year election. This is a crossroads in the history of our civilization that will determine whether or not we, the people, reclaim control over our government, unquote, Trump told the cheering crowd. A few beats later, he said, quote, we've seen this firsthand in the WikiLeaks documents in which Hillary Clinton meets in secret with international banks to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty in order to enrich these global financial powers, her special interest friends, and her donors, unquote. He then went on at great length describing what he alleged was coordination between the New York Times and the Clinton campaign, noting the newspaper's Wednesday night reporting detailing allegations by two women who said Trump had sexually accosted them. Of course, he contended that the women were liars. He offered a disquisition on previous New York Times pieces about his behavior with women. It was all a grand conspiracy, he said, not just against him personally, but against the United States of America. The agenda of the, quote, media establishment, unquote, Trump said, was to elect, quote, crooked, unquote, Hillary Clinton in the service of, quote, special global interests rigging the system, unquote. There are a lot of ways in the land of Wingnutia to telegraph that your target is Jews, and these are two of them. Remember them. You'll be hearing a lot in coming days about the, quote, media establishment, unquote, global, quote, global special interests, unquote, oh, and, quote, bankers, unquote, skipping down. Perhaps most chilling in all of the hate-stoking and conspiracy-mongering Trump demonstrated Thursday is his assertion that, quote, this is war, that the, quote, media establishment, unquote, and the Clintons are engaged in a conspiracy that is making war on the American people, no matter how many lives they destroyed. Quote, for them, it's a war, Trump said, and for them, nothing at all is out of bounds. This is a struggle for the survival of our nation, unquote. Trump has learned well from his white nationalist friends. After all, the guy who likely wrote Thursday's script, Trump campaign CEO Stephen K. Bannon, is the one who boasted of providing, quote, the platform for the alt-right, unquote, that anti-Semitic, misogynist movement from which Trump has derived such succor. With Thursday's speech, Trump has baldly laid out his true agenda, a post-election insurrection. Indeed, I would note, too, that the day after Election Day, which will be November 9th, is also the German Day of Destiny. That is a day on which the Nazis purposefully scheduled many of their key events, from the Beer Hall Putsch of 1923 to the Kristallnacht of 1938. The Berlin Wall came down on November 9th of 1989. I don't think that is a coincidence. And again, what we are seeing with the Truppenkampfverbande is the transformation of the underground Reich into an above-ground, broad-based political fascist slash Nazi movement. And I don't think the significance of this could be or should be exaggerated in any way. I'm expecting, although it may not all happen on November 9th or within the 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 2 months or 3 months of the end of the campaign, I think going forward you are going to see a significant ramping up of right-wing and fascist violence, from acts of lone wolf terror and assassination of the type that Glenn Greenwald ran legal interference for when he was an attorney, to occupations of federal land by people like either the Oath Keepers or Cleveland Bundy or someone like that. I think you're going to be seeing a huge uptick in that type of activity, paramilitary, right-wing activity. I think a lot of cops are going to get killed in this. It will be interesting to me. We're going to talk about Trump's dog whistle to the sovereign citizen movement. The fellow, the African-American fellow who went off in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and killed a bunch of people, was actually a black sovereign citizen. So it will be interesting to see if, to an extent, the Truppenkampfverbande and the Bundy Brigade merge with elements of Black Lives Matter, the common denominator and the common demonology being the demonizing of the police. Recapping an article with which we closed our last program, this from the New York, actually, no, before we do that, in opposition to that article by Adele M. Stan from Alternet, the New York Times is not only the CIA's number one propaganda asset, it is this country's best newspaper, but at the same time, that could be interpreted as damning with faint praise. At this point, the New York Times has been in Warren Report mode for quite some time. It was the New York Times that published the Warren Report. And with things like Ukraine and anything having to do with Russia, the New York Times has been completely off the deep end for quite some time. And indeed, I think in terms of the responsibility for setting the stage for what the Truppenkampfverbande is manifesting, no one bears more responsibility for the New York Times with its cover-up of things ranging from the JFK assassination to the CIA engaging in drugs. Nonetheless, not even the New York Times could fail to note the Truppenkampfverbande's dog whistle from the New York Times of October 15th of 2016, a news analysis column by Jonathan Martin. Trump's barrage of heated speech has little precedent, unquote. Actually, it has quite a bit. Quote, Hillary Clinton meets in secret with international banks to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty in order to enrich these global financial powers, her special interest friends, and her donors, unquote. Mr. Trump at a rally on Thursday in West Palm Beach, Florida. Then Jonathan Martin goes on to comment, Mr. Trump veers dangerously close to the territory of the protocols of the Elders of Zion, a fabricated anti-Semitic text in discussing the WikiLeaks hacks that revealed some of Mrs. Clinton's speeches to financial institutions. The protocols, of course, one of the influences on Adolf Hitler. That same edition of the New York Times, October 15th of 2016, in an op-ed column by Roger Cohen, had this. This is called How Dictatorships Are Born. Just to make his pedigree clear, Donald Trump is now suggesting that Hillary Clinton, quote, meets in secret with international banks to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty in order to enrich these global financial powers, her special interest friends, and her donors, unquote. What was it the Nazis called the Jews? Oh, yes, ruthless parasites. That's it. And again, what Trump is doing with the using these code words is basically he is channeling Adolf Hitler. He is accusing Hillary Clinton basically of being a tool of the Jews. During the campaign, he retweeted a posting from a far right-wing message board that had the Star of David and Hillary Clinton against a background of bundled $100 bills. That was a similar message. The point being that what Trump is doing is overtly using the same rhetoric that Hitler used and that Nazis and fascists had used for quite some time. And I think the Adele Stan column from Alternet and some other material we're going to look at are absolutely correct. Again, what has coalesced around Donald Trump has been built over a period of time, and it is not going away. The term that I crafted, the Trumpen Confabonder, really is turning out to be altogether prescient. This is not to blow my own horn, but it really is going to be a Nazi infantry formation going forward. The Washington Post of October 14th of 2016, an article by Chris Cilizza, C-I-L-L-I-Z-Z-A. Donald Trump is setting the stage to never concede the 2016 election. Skipping down. At a rally on Friday in Greensboro, North Carolina, Trump leaned into his rigged, unquote, premise. "This whole election is being rigged," Trump told the crowd, the roaring crowd. "The whole thing is one big fix, one big ugly lie. It's one big fix." Again, "this whole election is being rigged," Trump told the roaring crowd. "The whole thing is one big fix, one big ugly lie. It's one big fix," unquote. Given that rhetoric, it's difficult for me to imagine that in 25 days' time, if he comes up short to Hillary Clinton, Trump will simply concede the election. He is actively fomenting the idea that the results on November 8th will be invalid no matter what they say because of the rigged nature of the whole process. He is priming the pump among his supporters to never accept that he actually lost, but instead had it stolen from him by the Democratic media complex, which couldn't deal with the truths he was telling. Skipping down. Trump has shown that he is a master of grievance politics in this race. He now seems to be setting up the greatest grievance of all for the voters who support him, that their votes don't matter because Hillary Clinton and all of her media enablers, and I would add, and international bankers, unquote, have already determined the outcome of this election. And the blog posting with which we closed our previous program, this from Talking Points Memo Editor's blog from October 12th of 2016, "Danger on November 9th," this by Josh Marshall. I've been wanting to discuss this, but so much has been happening, it keeps getting pushed back to the next day or the next post. Quite simply, everybody needs to be paying close attention to what happens on November 9th. It now seems quite likely that Hillary Clinton will win the November election and become the next president of the United States. But Donald Trump has been for months pushing the idea that the election may be stolen from him by some mix of voter fraud by racial and ethnic minorities, or more systemic election rigging by persons unknown. Polls show that large numbers of his supporters believe that. And then, and this column is in the description for the record 928, then Josh Marshall goes on to discuss the longstanding GOP gambit of alleging voter fraud as a means of basically purging minority voters who traditionally vote Democratic from the voter rolls. But then Marshall goes on to say, "But to date, the voter fraud scam has never been fully weaponized as a way to delegitimize and even resist a specific election, certainly not a national election. As Rick Hazen explains here, Donald Trump is doing that now. And he is succeeding in as much as he's convinced substantial numbers of his supporters that if he loses, it will be because the election was stolen." And indeed, I'm expecting a significant and long-lasting uptick in right-wing violence, ranging from lone wolf leaderless resistance acts of terror and murder on up to full-blown paramilitary operations of the type that we saw on the Cleveland Bundy Ranch and the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
In addition to sending dog whistle signals to Nazis and anti-Semites about Hillary Clinton, basically being a tool of the Jews, unquote, as noted in this Daily Beast article from October 13th of 2016, Linda Tirado, T-I-R-A-D-O, is noting, quote, Trump's speech, dog whistles to the sovereign citizen set, unquote. She goes on to comment, Trump's Thursday speech marked a turning point. There is now no scenario in which this country repudiates him and merely goes about its business as usual. It's easy to forget how silly most people thought Donald Trump was all the way back in January. It was before any primaries or caucuses. Trump led in most polls, but people still couldn't really quite believe that people were actually going to vote for him. I spent much of that month at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge reporting for the Daily Beast on the militants who had taken it over. In the intervening months, Trump has morphed from a vague joke or a thumb in the eye of the establishment, depending on your point of view, to a fascist, megalomaniacal wreck of a candidate who is unlikely to be elected because he is fundamentally incapable of seeing past his own nose. Skipping down. I watched his speech Thursday, and if I closed my eyes, I could smell the campfire smoke at the Malheur Refuge and feel the Oregon winter wind on my face. Here were the conspiracies, the references to the shadowy international cabals, the whispers about the illegitimacy of the Department of Justice, and the trilateralist co-opting of the FBI. It was like listening to an immodest Amon Bundy. We have to protect ourselves from not just the government, because it is only a pawn, but from the people who really run it. We should be watchful, resilient, ready. And though he is reluctant, he will sacrifice himself, for he is the only one who can save us from the terror. Donald Trump shouted out every fevered dystopian fantasy I heard at the Malheur Refuge, with the exceptions of Agenda 21 and abortion as population control. They control the Department of Justice, Trump said. They have essentially corrupted the director of the FBI, unquote. This is a conspiracy against you, the American people, and we cannot let this happen or continue. This is our moment of reckoning, unquote. This is precisely the logic that led a few hundred people to take up arms against the government in Oregon, though at least Amon Bundy started with a reasonably legitimate premise. Donald Trump doesn't even have two Americans jailed twice for the same crime to legitimize his quest. What he has is a small but growing fringe that talks about we the people instead of Americans, unquote. We have already seen the violence at his rallies. We have seen the vicious street attacks. We have worried about the rise of the right. What I have not until Thursday heard was something that spiked my nativist upbringing, words delivered in a very particular order that made me want to go buy another rifle and check my food storage. I was raised among white people, sent to an elementary school in which there were no black kids, and then moved to the mountains of Utah for high school, where the neo-Nazis recruited at illicit drinking parties because kids who would have a beer were already disaffected in an overwhelmingly Mormon culture. There is a part of me that remembers the coding, the tones, remembers the fear that the government might come and massacre us again as they had in times not that long ago. I reject it violently, but you don't ever forget what you were raised to believe, even if you learn better. It would take a linguist to comb through that speech and parse out which words came from where. I am only a writer steeped in the language of right-wing revolution. I was outraged by Trump before, but now I am worried. There is no scenario in which this country repudiates him and then goes about its business. We allowed his rise, and we have emboldened the people that we ignored for so long. We have 3 weeks to go yet, more scandals and reactions and fear and terror, and at the end of it, we will have an unknowable number of people who will absolutely and without question think that Hillary Clinton's election is an unmistakable sign that it is time for the governed to withdraw their consent. Not the majority, not even many compared to the millions of people who live in America, but enough. Thursday, Donald Trump traveled a step farther down the path of militant right-wing revolution. It wasn't a call to arms exactly, but it was far past the point of comfort. And again, hearkening to November 9th, the day after Election Day, and the German Day of Destiny. From the Talking Points memo, Livewire, an article by Tierney, T-I-E-R-N-E-Y, Sneed, S-N-E-E-D, from October 14th, 2016. Feds, right-wing militia plotted November 9th attack on Somali immigrants in Kansas. The feds arrested three members of a right-wing militia for allegedly planning to detonate explosives at an apartment complex in Garden City, Kansas, with Somali Muslims specifically the target, law enforcement announced on Friday. Skipping down, the attack was allegedly planned for the day after Election Day, law enforcement said at a press conference. Skipping down again. The suspects allegedly planned to attack the housing complex where approximately 120 people live and where one of the apartments was used as a mosque, the officials said. They were part of a militia group that called itself the Crusaders, according to law enforcement. They also considered targeting churches and public officials who supported the Somali community, as well as the landlords that rented to the immigrants, the officials said. And again, I think we're going to be seeing much more of these types of things. Now, I mentioned that Donald Trump's deputy campaign chairman, David Bossi, is the head of Citizens United, along with the chairman, Steve Bannon, of Breitbart News. They are people who have used some of the same propaganda techniques as Adolf Hitler and some of his associates, such as Leni Riefenstahl. From Alternet of October 6th of 2016, the vast majority of this article will be in the description for the record 928. I'm simply going to ask to access some aspects of it, read some aspects of it now. This is by Alex Koch, K-O-T-C-H. Trump campaign leaders made movies comparable to Nazi propaganda. Skipping down. Early on, Donald Trump courted the far right, retweeting posts from the Twitter accounts of white supremacists. He also received support from some he apparently didn't court, winning praise from the likes of former KKK leader David Duke, and even made the California ballot as the nominee of a racist political party. Seeing how Steve Bannon had crafted Breitbart News, the right-wing website he ran, into a hub for young white nationalists, the alt-right, to bat around conspiracy theories, Trump tapped Bannon on August 17th to be his campaign CEO. As executive chairman of Breitbart, Bannon published deceptive and manufactured stories to aid the right wing, and in the presidential campaign treated his media company as a surrogate for Trump. On September 1st, Trump chose David Bossie, B-O-S-S-I-E, president and chairman of the right-wing nonprofit Citizens United, as his deputy campaign manager. Bossie has produced 25 films with Citizens United Productions. Some of these films feature Bannon as writer, director, and executive producer. It was Bossie's group whose name came to define the unlimited flow of corporate and union cash into elections, thanks to the Supreme Court's decision in the 2010 case Citizens United brought against the Federal Election Commission. At issue was an anti-Clinton Citizens United production called Hillary the Movie, which the FEC had deemed a campaign advertisement subject to regulation based on campaign finance law. The movie was produced for airing in the 2008 presidential election, when many expected Hillary Clinton to be the Democratic nominee. Now, Bossie has joined Bannon, his longtime teammate, to run Trump's campaign of lies and fear-mongering against Clinton. And then there is discussion of the activities of both Bossie and Bannon against Hillary Clinton, skipping down. Bossie and Trump are no strangers. In 2014, Trump's foundation donated $100,000 to the Citizens United Foundation, the same year that the group filed a lawsuit against New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who was suing Trump over the fraudulent practices of Trump University. Skipping down, the late Andrew Breitbart, founder of the website Bannon went on to lead, called Bannon the Lenny Riefenstahl of the Tea Party movement, a reference to the infamous creator of Nazi propaganda films. Skipping down. Ivana Trump, the candidate's first wife, told Vanity Fair in 1990 that her husband kept a copy of Adolf Hitler's Mein New Order, a collection of speeches that display the Nazi dictator's exceptional ability to manipulate reality, in the cabinet near his bed. Quote, perhaps his possession of Hitler's speeches merely indicates an interest in Hitler's genius at propaganda, mused Marie Brenner, author of the article. The Nazi regime produced a massive amount of propaganda. It had an entire ministry of public enlightenment and propaganda headed by Joseph Goebbels. A central technique of Nazi propagandists, according to the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, was to cast Jews as outsiders and dangerous enemies of the Reich, subhuman creatures infiltrating Aryan society, unquote. Karen Elizabeth Price, a filmmaker who teaches courses on documentary film at Duke University, told Alternet via email that, quote, most successful propaganda films appeal to something that already exists in the viewer, perhaps only as a feeling or germ of an idea, and helps to fill in the blanks, unquote. After Germany had to concede territories and accept blame for World War I and was then hit by the Great Depression, people felt wounded and demoralized. In Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, which some regard as the greatest propaganda film of all time, quote, a solution to that despair is presented in the form of a patriotic savior, in this case Adolf Hitler, already hard at work promising to restore Germany to its former power and glory, said Price, skipping down. In her analysis of Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, Price noted that, quote, perhaps most critically, Germany's comeback is portrayed as well underway. The viewer need only jump aboard. What is being said implicitly is that there is no alternative, unquote. In Battle for America, unquote, Bannon and Bossie follow the same formula, positing the Tea Party movement as the bandwagon to jump on. But the formula isn't the only thing about the film that carries echoes of Goebbels. A researcher and counsel for the film was white nationalist Robert van der Vert. And so again, some of the, at this point, fairly overt Nazi antecedents and subtexts of what Trump is laying down are being noted by others, even the New York Times. When the New York Times is comparing Trump to Hitler or his rhetoric to Hitler's, you know it is very late in the day.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
One of the things that we noted in For the Record 918 and 919 was what I believe is Donald Trump's relatively benign comments about Putin, Russia, Ukraine, Crimea, etc., as the equivalent of the Steuben Society's journalistic outlet, the Bürger Zeitung's 1949 open letter to Stalin. One of the things that we saw in that was that the bidding war created by that and by the Soviet note of March 10th of 1952 benefited Germany, and that Trump's comments about NATO were along the same lines of moves already underway in the immediate aftermath of World War II to have Germany move away from NATO to preside over a united Europe, and ultimately for NATO to be replaced by an all-EU German-dominated military formation. Recently, Great Britain left the EU, the much ballyhooed Brexit, and that was presided over by, among others, Nigel Farage of the UK Independence Party. And the BBC of October 9th of 2016 was among many outlets noting that Nigel Farage was basically someone who was supporting Donald Trump. Obscene Donald Trump comments, alpha male boasting. This about Nigel Farage's support for Donald Trump. And again, it's in the description for the program. Alleged sighting of Farage at German embassy sparks citizenship speculation. This by John Henley from August 16th of 2016. And this notes that this is from the Independent of the UK. This will be in the description for the program. I would note that Nigel Farage is married to a German woman, and there is speculation in the article that he was seeking German citizenship. Now, normally, people get married. It's not a big deal. In and of itself, there is nothing particularly remarkable about someone from the UK marrying a German woman or a German man. However, in the world of covert operations, often a spouse or a lover can also be a case officer or a paymaster. And I would note that one of the areas of conflict between Great Britain and the EU was the refusal of Great Britain to be part of the German-dominated all-EU military structure that is being developed. Nigel Farage led Great Britain's exit from the EU. That may very well pave the way for the realization of a German-dominated all-EU military structure that we spoke about in For the Record 918 and 919, supplanting NATO. Another person who has been pulling for Donald Trump is a Russian fascist named Vladimir Zhirinovsky, who, although he has an uneasy relationship, a supportive relationship at this point with Vladimir Putin, is not really the ally that he is being described as here. From Reuters, October 12th of 2016, by Andrew Osborne, Putin ally tells Americans, vote for Trump or face nuclear war. One of the points to note about Vladimir Zhirinovsky is that one of his main financial backers when he was first getting started in politics was none other than Gerhard Fly, who not only was very close to Reinhard Galen, but whose name crops up in connection with the Kennedy assassination, because it was in a conversation with Gerhard Fry that General Edwin Walker first floated the disinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald had tried to kill him. The following is taken from For the Record, program number 94, recorded on May 5th of 1998, more than 18 years ago.
This is from the Germany Alert newsletter of April 27th of 1998. It's datelined Magdeburg, M-A-G-D-E-B-U-R-G, and headlined Pro-Nazi DVU wins 13% in Saxony-Anhalt election. The DVU is a Deutsche Volksunion. This, by the way, is essentially a Nazi party in Germany. More about the DVU in a minute. Raging forces of anti-foreigner, anti-Semitic, anti-gay hate have inflicted a hideous victory upon Saxony-Anhalt, polling some 13% of the vote for the pro-Nazi German People's Union, or DVU, in state elections. DVU boss Gerhard Frey, F-R-E-Y, a multimillionaire publisher who has been a leader of pro-Nazi forces in Germany for decades, will see 14 of his party's members in the state parliament. DVU candidates campaigned with slogans like, "Foreigner bandits get out," and "German money for German jobs" in the eastern state, where even official statistics now show a record 22.6% of the workforce have no jobs. By the way, I want listeners to note very carefully the rhetoric being used by fascists in Europe, including some of the Nazis in Germany, because I want to stress very carefully and emphatically the continuity both rhetorically and ideologically between the fascist powers currently, the fascist parties currently coming to the fore in Europe, and the supposedly respectable Republican Party of the United States, which is itself a fascist party, at this point somewhat to the right of Mussolini. Please note the ideological and rhetorical continuity between these, quote, extremist, unquote, fascist and Nazi parties in Europe and the, quote, respectable, unquote, Republican Party in the United States. Continuing. Of the unemployment in Saxony-Anhalt, unofficial estimates put real employment close to 50% and much higher still for young voters. Pro-Nazis ran a well-financed campaign that included pamphlets for every household, wall posters throughout the state, and even leaflets dropped from aircraft. Exit polls showed that up to 30% of voters under 30 years old voted for the pro-Nazis. And again, I think that is a very, very important electoral result. It has been predictably, its significance has been predictably minimized by media critics, in particular in this country, pointing out that this is only one particular part of Germany, and the former East Germany is bedeviled by very, very high unemployment. All of Europe, including Germany and France, are experiencing very high unemployment. And around the world, including in the United States, the economic distress being caused by corporations downsizing and or moving major manufacturing facilities to countries where they can take advantage of cheaper labor costs is not only causing economic distress, but it's causing political dissatisfaction, and that is promoting the rise of fascism around the world, including and especially here in the United States. Some of the connections between German and American fascism were underscored in a book called The Man Who Knew Too Much. This is arguably certainly the most comprehensive, arguably the best single volume about the assassination of President Kennedy. The book The Man Who Knew Too Much was authored by Dick Russell, published in hardcover and softcover by Carroll and Graf Publishers, copyright 1992. The ISBN number is 0-88184-900-6. And in The Man Who Knew Too Much, there is a discussion of the fact that the misinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald supposedly fired at former Major General Edwin Walker, an extreme right-winger in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, that misinformation, which was floated by the Warren Commission in order to give the impression that Lee Harvey Oswald was not a politically motivated assassin when he allegedly slew the liberal President Kennedy, because he had also allegedly tried to kill the ultra-right right-wing General Walker. Well, in fact, there are serious problems with the notion of Oswald's having fired at Walker, and I think the following passage from The Man Who Knew Too Much will make clear just what those problems are. The first mention, Dick Russell writes in The Man Who Knew Too Much, the first mention of Oswald's attempt on Walker had appeared in the Deutsche Nationalzeitung and Soldatenzeitung, a right-wing newspaper out of Munich, West Germany, on November 29, 1963. Yet Marina Oswald would not tell her story to the FBI until 4 days later, purportedly the first awareness anybody had of it. Assassination researcher Peter Dale Scott's look into the newspaper's history revealed that it had several ex-Nazis and ex-SS men on its staff, and a long arm into American far-right circles. Its editor, Gerhard Frey, capital F-R-E-Y, was closely tied in Munich to the Ukrainian ABN, as well as to two men whose names show up among General Willoughby's correspondents, Dr. Theodor Oberlander and Walter Becker. General Willoughby, nee Wiedenbach, was a German-born fascist who was General MacArthur's chief of intelligence from 1939 to 1950. He also was a major figure in the American far-right and international fascist circles. Theodor Oberlander, a former SS officer, was a German cabinet minister for ex-Ballet until his role in liquidating Jewish populations in the former Soviet Union came to light. And Dr. Walter Becker, the infamous Dr. B, was a Sudeten German fascist who had much to do with the arranging the Nazi takeover of the Sudetenland in what used to be Czechoslovakia. Please note, however, that supposedly Marina Oswald disclosed the Walker-Oswald connection to the light of day on December 3rd of 1963, yet Gerhard Frey had that information published 4 days before that. He got his information from General Walker. I would note that Gerhard Frey and the Nazi elements that of which he was a part are very profoundly connected to their American fascist counterparts, which is not to say that Americans or Germans are necessarily fascist, but fascism is obviously not alien to either country, and I want to emphasize that the German fascist elements have very strong connections to their American counterparts, and in fact not only the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit that was incorporated into U.S. intelligence at the end of the war, but also the Ethnic Outreach Council of the Republican Party, literally a Nazi wing of the U.S. Republican Party, very closely connected to the Gehlen organization and the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, basically a reworking of Adolf Hitler's committee of It was an organization put together by Adolf, the Committee of Subjugated Nations. Was what Adolf Hitler called it, the organization, his consortium of Central and Eastern European fascists, that was renamed the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations at the end of World War II. That was later incorporated into the former World Anti-Communist League, and those types of elements, the Central and Eastern European fascists, such as the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Romanian Iron Guard, and various Gehlen elements, constitute what is literally a Nazi wing of the U.S. Republican Party today, which is viewed as being able to deliver the key vote in five swing states. There's a miscellaneous archive show called Nazis and Anti-Semites on George Bush's campaign that talks about that. Also, a two-hour interview with John Loftus, along with Mark Ahrens, the co-author of The Secret War Against the Jews. Both of those tapes are available from Spitfire for those who would like to peruse the documentation. In addition, Gerhard Frey himself was very close to the aforementioned former Nazi Major General Reinhard Gehlen. Again, Gehlen was in charge of all Third Reich intelligence for the Eastern Front in World War II. He then jumped to first U.S. intelligence, then NATO, and finally the Federal Republic of Germany, with his organization basically intact. The derivative and residua of Adolf Hitler's Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, the Gehlen Organization, very closely connected to the Odessa, the post-World War II SS Underground. The connections between Gehlen, the Odessa, and in turn between Gehlen's organization and Gerhard Fry are discussed in a vitally important recent book entitled The Beast Reawakens. That book was authored in hardcover by Martin A. Lee. Copyright 1997, published by Little Brown Incorporated. There are, by the way, four different one-hour interviews that I've recorded with Martin Lee. Those are available from Spitfire. The ISBN number for The Beast Reawakens is 0-316-51959-6. And in The Beast Reawakens, there's a discussion of the connections between Gerhard Fry and Reinhard Gehlen. Gehlen's organization finally wound up as the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German intelligence service. The connection here is between Russian fascist Vladimir Zhirinovsky and Gerhard Fry. Fry was one of the major funding sources for Zhirinovsky's rise in the former Soviet Union. Later on in this program, time permitting, we will be talking about fascism and its rise in some of the former Soviet republics as well. Of the Zhirinovsky-Fry and Fry-Gehlen connections, Martin A. Lee writes as follows. Although Zhirinovsky later spoke of destroying Germany with nuclear weapons if it got out of line, his close association with the DVU, that's the party that just won 13% in Saxony-Anhalt, was beneficial to both parties. The Russian got much-needed cash, while Fry, a marginal figure in German politics, gained extensive media attention by rubbing shoulders with Zhirinovsky. This enhanced Fry's reputation among German neo-Nazi groups, which had quarreled with the DVU during the Cold War because of its support for NATO and the NATO alliance. Even before he formed the DVU in 1971, with the professed objective to, quote, save Germany from communism, unquote, Fry received behind-the-scenes support from General Reinhard Gehlen, Bonn's powerful spy chief. But after the superpower face-off ended, the DVU Führer quickly shifted gears and demanded that Germany leave NATO. His newspapers began to run inflammatory articles that denounced the United States and praised Russia as a more suitable partner for post-Cold War Germany. Fry also joined the chorus of neo-Nazi agitators who expressed solidarity with Saddam Hussein and condemned the U.S.-led war against Iraq in 1991.
That again from For the Record program number 94, recorded on May 5th of 1998. We're going to go into Trump's supporters abroad, including Zhirinovsky, financed in part by Gerhard Fry and Nigel Farage, and the Hindu nationalists who have grouped around Modi. In our next program, however, this concludes For the Record program number 928, The Trump and Confabanda Part 7, Locker Room Eclipse Part 2, being recorded on October 21st of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.